FU Network. Yeah, it's about an attitude, but FU stands for us. Us, regular people, making the type of authentic, honest, down-to-earth programming that big media stomped out of existence. Well, our message to big media is FU. Come on, join the team. Reclaim our media for the common people. Become a supporter for $5 a month via Patreon or PayPal. Patreon.com/FU Network TV or PayPal at FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. That's Patreon.com/FU Network TV or PayPal at FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. Come on, $5 a month? That's $1.50 a week to rebuild real Canadian media. You drop more than that every day on overpriced coffee. Yeah, you do. So if you like our podcasts, tell big media FU and cough up a fin. Now, here's your show.
Visionaires, a podcast that tracks the journeys of entrepreneurs who have found success and fulfillment by following their muse down the road less traveled. Hello and welcome to Visionaires. I'm Stephen Kersner. When people think of entrepreneurs, they think of people who open a store or provide a service. They don't tend to think about authors. But like all entrepreneurs, authors have to reach inside themselves to find their dream and the grit, wit, and fortitude to make that dream a reality. And one of the most competitive segments of literature is children's books. And my guest, Heather Gordon, in addition to being a superstar in the world of television, digital communications, and entertainment, is an accomplished children's author with two published books under her belt, Does the Queen Fart? And I Am Lazarus, A Goat Story, both available in stores and on Amazon. We're going to talk with Heather today about what it takes to become a published author and what pitfalls, setbacks, and challenges you may face and rise above. Welcome to Visionaires, Heather.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me.
And congratulations on your books.
Thank you. Yes, a rewarding experience in writing and publishing books.
Now, one of the benefits of knowing someone profoundly creative is that they have depths to them that surprise you in a good way. Now, we've known each other for over 20 years, and I knew about your talents in the world of communications, but I had no idea you were also a writer. Where did the journey to being a published children's author begin?
Good question. So I don't even think I knew I was a writer, and I'm still not convinced that I am, to be honest with you.
Well, you fooled a lot of people.
it's my dark art. I knew for a long time that I wanted to write a children's book. Now recognize that a lot of people have a desire to write a kid's book. And I think one of the magical things about children's literatures, good writers make it look really easy, but it's not. Like, it's 10 lines in a book. How difficult can that be to be creative and have a kid laugh? And it's actually much harder than it looks. So after a bunch of false starts and the realization that it is a lot, takes a lot more than one would think to build a tale that will capture the attention of children in a very crowded market. I married a novelist, as it would happen. And he was aware of my desires and my sort of small pursuits at the time. And it probably was very, well, it wasn't, it, I know for a fact it was helpful to have someone in my corner that believed in me probably before I believed in myself, because it gave me the courage to keep going. It gave me the courage to not care what people thought. I mean, I think the thing that limits all of us in some way, or most of us, is fear, like fear of failure, fear of not producing something that you feel is worthy to share with the world. There's a whole bunch of fear wrapped up in it. I've got a successful career. I don't want to tank it by, you know, having a horrible kid's book be published, and especially one that, you know, deals with the topic of farting.
Well, changing your name as an author is always a possibility too.
Yes. I was thinking about it and going into hiding after such a controversial book was published.
Yeah, so controversial.
But that's the other thing. I would sit in, you get into your head and it's like, okay, what is the book that I think the world wants? What is the book that publishers are looking for? And ultimately, those weren't the books that I wanted to write. I had the only book that I really wanted to write. I don't know what it says about me, probably lots, is Does the Queen Fart? It was in my head, and it was the one that I had to go forward with. It was the only one I wanted to. So there was that. And then, you know, the feeling that because I'm so passionate about it, maybe I'm on to something. You're going to polarize people. There's a lot of people that do not, parents that do not want to make farting funny.
They're going up against the tide, because there's nothing funnier to kids than farting, except maybe burping comes in second, but there's nothing kids laugh at more than farting.
Well, you know what? I would also challenge you and say there's nothing adults laugh more at. We just, you know, we each try not to do things in public anymore, but you know, but there, the reality is there are parents out there that do want to keep a lid on that kind of activity and to talk about it and laugh about it and gosh forbid, make it more socially acceptable, is not something that they want to bring into their house. But you know, really the idea for the book was based around the fact that we all have these bodies that are pure magic. Like our brains, our circulatory system, like our digestive system, like the fact that we get up and walk around, like it's a miracle. And then, you know, our bodies are working functionally and doing what they're supposed to be doing, but you fart and then all of a sudden you're told, oh, that's disgusting. And you, like, you send this this message to a kid that their body is less than perfect because it's doing this perceived gross thing. Well, your body's doing exactly what it's supposed to be doing if you're eating well, and so that's what your body does. So celebrate it. It's a beautiful thing, this body of ours, and we need to take care of it and maybe appreciate it a little bit more, because it's pretty complex.
Well, I think the farts are something that the emitter enjoys far more than the receiver.
Not in our house. My children can laugh for farts. It doesn't matter. It's a kid thing, though. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. You see, it's a controversial topic, Steve. People take sides. There's...
I wasn't aware that this was part of the culture war.
Now you know. This is now, an expose.
Now, did you want to write a children's book first and centered on Does the Queen Fart as your topic eventually? Or what came first, the chicken or the egg?
The idea for the book was first, and it was originally, I had ideas about writing it about the pugs that I used to have.
I remember those pugs.
Yes, the pugs. So I had this idea for pug tails, you know, tails.
Yes.
Pretty funny. So those URLs were registered like 15 years ago and never did anything with them. And then when I reapproached it, you know, 6 years ago, whenever it was, then that was where the queen farting idea came. And then it just stuck.
It just stuck. Now you mentioned,
stuck like glue.
Now was this idea there before you had children?
No, I believe this was post birth.
Okay, so you were becoming much more acquainted with the sounds and the emissions that bodies make once you've had a kid.
And I was also more aware of my own actions around the children, because I didn't want to be that person that inadvertently, through the messages that I was sending, would make my kid feel bad about his body. I think it was when my son Laszlo was toilet training, and I think he was, let's just say, taking his time. I had been doing some research and discovered that me as a mother or a father could be inadvertently tripping yourself up if you, you know, say, ooh, stinky, and make a little bit of a face every time they go to the bathroom.
That's interesting.
If you're a young kid sitting on a potty, that doesn't really encourage you to want to poop in front of your parents on the potty, it actually does the exact opposite. It makes you go, oh my God, I'm going to get a yucky reaction from my mom. That, this isn't the reaction I want.
That makes complete sense. And yet until you said it, I had never thought of it that way.
Me neither. So that's where I started to think about, like, what else are we accidentally teaching our kids? Like, he's two and I'm already somehow conveying the idea that his body is gross, and or what his body produces is gross.
Right.
That's not right. His body is, you know, the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. And I was grateful for him and his health. And here I am, you know, possibly sending him a message that his beautiful little body was doing something disgusting. And that's where I think that sort of morphed into, and it led to farting and then how the queen made her grand entrance. I can't even remember. My husband's English, so maybe we talk about the queen a little bit. And I think I was looking for somebody who is that quintessential person that people would never believe to pass gas.
That's right.
And that, you know, there came the queen. Even though we know.
Well, I mean, the queen wears those dresses, and I imagine that if she passes gas, it tends to stick around for a while.
I think it probably escapes, but that's just like... You'd have to ask Phil.
We're not on first name basis. Now, you said that you did research about what publishers were looking for. How did you go about doing that?
It's a combination of, you know, the easiest thing to do is just go onto websites and look at what the most popular books are on an Amazon. And you get a pretty good idea of what is happening in the industry. And then you've got Google. There's a ton of research and materials on writing kids' books. So you kind of get a flavor of what's going on. And of course, mm-hmm. the topic I picked was one of the ones that can potentially be a no-fly zone. so that's, you know, if you wanted to write the next Olivia or, you know, whatever else is particularly popular at the time, you know, you can try and write for a publisher. But in my experience, you just won't find your own voice that way. It's and having seen my husband write novels and publishers being interested in changing, like I've seen Ian turn down a very lucrative book deal in the US from one of the major publishing houses because they had asked him to change the ending and make it a happy ending versus the ending in which my husband wanted to go with and ultimately went with. So it becomes an interesting ballet between, you know, your vision and what they think will sell. And it's where ultimately where where you lie on that spectrum. It's do you want to sell more books or do you want to create your art and have it consumed the way you had intended it and envisioned it and think is the best story versus the story that may sell more copies. So you kind of have to look at all of those things, like what's important to you. Is book sales important to you, or is it to create the story, this vision that you have? Because often those two don't dance together.
That's very interesting. Were you discouraged when you looked around and found that what you wanted to write wasn't what was in vogue at the time?
No, I didn't care. It reinforced that what I was doing for me and not because I was chasing what I thought would be a sellable, bankable story. I still maintained my job at the CBC during this process. So, I didn't think I had anything to lose other than my pride, of course, if it was right. Terrible.
Yeah, who cares about that, right?
Who cares about that little thing? But Yeah, no, it was the book. I mean, I'm making it sound like I've written this big, important novel, but it's a kid's book. So keeping that in mind, I wrote the book I wanted to write.
Well, I mean, let's not put aside kid's books as being somehow lesser.
No,
because I mean, you talked about how earlier you said, you know, it's 10 lines. How hard that can that be? As somebody who writes as well, brevity is harder than going on and on and on, having fewer words to be able to get across the point or the emotion. That is a very, very difficult discipline, and is in many ways harder than being able to write for adults, where you do have far more lines, far more sentences, paragraphs to get your point across.
Agreed. And that's why the good ones make it look easy, right? It's a gift. It is something that can be deceiving when you look at like where the wild things are or something. Of course, this is easy. The kid, he goes into his room, he goes into his imagination, but it's a work of art, right?
Now, what books did you read as a kid that gave you this love for children's literature?
The books that I remember reading were like Frog and Toad. Like, I don't have a great recollection of being devouring books. And I know we read a lot as kids, but it was more my experiences in parenthood, I think, that drove what I saw and what I consumed as a parent, and my experience as a parent. So marrying the books that I was reading to the kids with the lessons I was learning about raising another human being in this world, and trying to raise good, confident children.
That's the key, isn't it? So much in the world tells people as children and older not to be confident.
Totally. And God, can you imagine, like, just to your point, you never thought of it. I'd feel horrible if I found out in 10 years that some things I'd been inadvertently doing had set my children up for, identity or any of those insecurities. Like, that's the last thing you want to do. So just being more aware of your actions and how your words have an impact on these little human beings. And it's, it's not done out of malice. I think you don't realize what messages you can be sending. Kids pay attention. They're watching you.
They're sponges.
Oh yeah. They're watching. And it's not just exactly the words you say. It's your body language. It's icy silences across the dinner table that when you don't want your kids to know you're quarreling with your lover or your husband, they know. they're clever little things, and you need to be aware they're picking up on your energy, whether you think it or not.
And then
for the second book, the inspiration came from film, and the Stanley Kubrick and the Greek legend of Spartacus. So yeah, so the exact opposite.
Forgive my laughter. It's just, what a jump in sources of inspiration.
Totally, but that's the fun part, right?
And Spartacus became a goat.
Well, yes, in my world, he's a goat. I for some reason became fascinated by goats sitting in trees. Have you seen this?
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely.
I found it because, the internet. And I just couldn't stop Googling. I was obsessed. I mean, these little goats that were seemingly defying gravity, almost magical the way they were perched.
Yeah.
And so I was attracted to this idea of, miracles and things beyond nature that maybe we just don't know. And I don't want to live in a world where there are things I don't know. And the goats and trees was a nice little pleasant surprise. I must have rewatched Spartacus, and I thought the idea of the spirit of Spartacus, the unity, the loyalty, that was conveyed obviously in the I am Spartacus scene.
Yeah.
I found that inspirational and what a wonderful message to send to children about the friends you make and the loyalty to them and working together through adversity and all those great messages. And somehow I married the two into I am Lazarus. So Lazarus sounded like Spartacus, and it also sounds like my son's name, which is Laszlo.
Mm-hmm.
And there you go. So that the inspiration for that book, totally different. And that's the fun part. You never know what's going to inspire you, right?
No, I mean, well, when you're somebody, a creative person, you can take inspiration from something that somebody else sees as mundane. And because you rework it in your brain, it bounces around, it goes through permutations. It's like Willy Wonka's factory in a sense. And it comes out looking completely different than it went in, as Spartacus did, becoming Lazarus.
Yes.
All those great all those great messages that you distilled down into a story for children. Now, when you were starting to write the book, you had read many books to Laszlo and eventually to Clementine. Did you study the form? Because as we mentioned, it is a specific discipline, writing with few words and getting the point and emotion across. Did you study the form, or did you feel that through osmosis you had absorbed a good deal of it?
You definitely pay different attention to things when you're trying to write a book. Like before this, you just enjoy a story for the sake of the story, and you're not really thinking about how many lines are on a page, and would you classify this as targeting 3 to 5 year olds or 5 to 7? Like, there's so much of that stuff that you never think of.
Mm-hmm.
So you start to pay attention to it, and then I would just go online and I'd research what targeted age groups and the length of books. Like, there's pretty standard protocols in the kids publishing world. Like, they're 32 pages. So there are easily accessible guidelines to be able to figure out, are you writing a picture book? Are you writing something a little bit bigger than that? Is it a chapter book? So when, you get to the age of, I don't know when chapter books start, but then the kids their brains are ready to absorb it in a chapter style, and they have the attention span, and it goes on from there. So it's basically trying to figure out what your audience, who your audience is the message that you want to write about. Does it make sense for that audience? So it's easily accessible via the internet, or if a community of children's book writers, it's pretty readily available, and things just sort of fall into place. It's like the story that I wanted to tell with both the farts and the goats. I needed a certain amount of text to be able to describe what was going on. So therefore there was no way it was going to be a picture book, because I had to explain the complexity of like your digestive system. And
right.
It was just a little bit above picture book. So there's just stuff like that you have to figure out. But once you have your idea, then you kind of go from there and figure out, okay, who is my listener? Who is my ideal listener? Mm-hmm. How old would they be? And then you kind of go from there and you figure out, well, how long is typically a book targeted to this demographic? How long is it? 32 pages, 2 lines every page. And you just kind of go from there.
Wow. 2 lines a page. I mean, that's sparse.
I'm just making up, like, yeah, it could be 2 lines, it could be 3 lines, but yeah, you have to keep the attention in the book flowing. Because if you open a book for a 5-year-old and there's 3 paragraphs on it and a little picture, they're out of there, right?
Of course. But did you have, was it a challenge wrestling your prose down to that few words?
Well, there's beautiful things called editors, and there's beautiful things called husbands. So, I'm lucky in that you need the support if you're starting out and with a desire to become a kid's book author. You're going to need the help of people. Stephen King needs an editor. Everybody needs an editor if you're writing. The chances of someone sitting down writing a book and it not needing different sets of eyeballs to objectively look at it is nil, right? It's a village.
Yes.
It's a village project, and I had lots of help to do it, right? So, and then you're unlikely to do it alone. But the good news is there's a lot of people out there that are willing to help and helpful. And there's online communities. I'm in various kids book online communities on LinkedIn, on Facebook. Like there are places to go to get help because there's a lot of people looking to do what we're doing in writing books. And there's a lot of people that have done it and are generous with their time and spirit.
I have to agree with you. I'm writing currently finally sitting down and writing a book about my memoirs of adventures with Ed the Sock in the TV world. And some
fabulous.
People have offered, people immediately offered to be test readers of these chapters. And I was quite surprised that there was enthusiasm at reading this stuff that I'm, churning out in 3-page chapters, 4-page chapters. And there, you'd be surprised if you're a writer out there, you'd be surprised. There are people that are very interested in what you're putting out there. I suppose the key has to be, and you would have had to face this, of course, is when you get feedback that isn't, this is the most fabulous thing ever, don't change a word, not being discouraged by it.
Yes, you've got to check your ego at the door. And it's when it's your work and your life, which is what you're doing, you've obviously got a sensitivity to it. It's a part of you. So it's good to recognize that you're not always going to hear that it's well done and you've hit the mark, but that's why you're sharing it, so that before it gets to the publishing state, it is the best it could possibly be. And there are generous people out there, but your story is fantastic. Like, how many people can say they've done what you did with the sock?
So
other than
far,
the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah, and they used a very different way to manipulate their socks.
It was let's be quite clear.
That's right. They weren't quite as articulated, I will say that. but you have to recognize.
Still very fascinating in their own right.
Yes, and they did it many times. You have to recognize, though, that people giving you that feedback are doing it out of goal of helping you. And sometimes they may not see the same vision you do. And you have to recognize, okay, they came at it with a frame of reference that's different. So perhaps their feedback isn't something that you need to heed, in full. You never dismiss anything out of hand, but sometimes people don't get what you're doing. And you said that you were doing, in writing Does the Queen Fart, you were doing something that wasn't something that was actively being solicited by publishers. Did you have any difficulty finding a literary agent for that or a publisher?
No, I didn't use a literary agent. I not for lack of trying. I sent out queries to a bunch of different literary agents. It's hard to get an agent. And had no luck. And then I eventually just decided, look, I'm just going to find my own way through this sort of quagmire of publishing. And so for Does the Queen Fart, I ended up self-publishing that one and then got a publisher for the Lazarus book. So I've had very different experiences with both sides of the publishing game. And there are pros and cons to both sides. I'm happy to share with you.
What are the pros and cons of going the literary agent or just direct to publisher route?
An agent is obviously a lot of publishing houses won't accept manuscripts unless you have an agent. They get thousands upon thousands of submissions, as you can appreciate. And the way that they can manage that is through literary agents who they've got relationships with, and they just bring them what they deem as the cream of the crop because they've made it past the first gate, if you will. So that's the biggest pro with the literary agent, is just getting into the publishing houses. But it's not impossible the other way. I mean, you always hear these crazy tales about what was that book? Gray, that dirty one?
Oh yeah, Shades of Gray, or
yeah. Why can't I remember it right now?
Why can't I remember 50 Shades of Gray?
Yeah, we're both pretending it's not our favorite book. What is that called?
Wasn't it 50 Shades of Gray?
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, I've got the pop-up book version.
I'm surprised I haven't read it. I wouldn't be embarrassed to say I have. Like, I've read Twilight. I'm not above certain styles of books, but I just haven't read that one yet. But there's just I guess my original point was, there are always the examples, and I think, you know, Harry Potter, you know, love or hate that woman, I think she got rejected by the best of them with Harry Potter. So there's always, there's not a surefire way, and a lot of very smart people have missed a lot of very smart literature. That's just sort of the way it goes. So, you know, I sort of approach it as put out as many feelers as possible and try and make connections in the industry. I benefited from someone that I lived with that was in the industry. So I had a lot of helpful advice, but networking is always good. Just keep at it. It's a lot of work. When you look back, what I thought writing a book was going to involve was a fraction of what it actually is to write it, to rewrite it again, to have it edited, to have to remap it out, because now you realize that the plot in the middle doesn't really make sense at the end and you've got to rework it. Like, it is a lot of work to get the book made. And then once it's made, then the hustle begins to get an audience, right? Like, how do you,
yes,
in the age of social media, drum up press, build your social channels, cross network with influencers, cross network with other writers? I mean, the beauty of where we're at today with social media is that this can be done by you, but it's time, it's energy, it's understanding the look, the style, the feel, who you want to align with in the influencer space. Are they going to do it for free, or can you exchange traffic? Like, there's so much that you could be doing, and you just got to hustle.
Yeah, well, that's the case with everything these days, because there is a surfeit of content out there, and being able to find the pearls amongst the swine is often exceptionally difficult. And it's difficult. It's almost like being Waldo on the beach,
yes,
but somebody's looking for Waldo from the moon. You know, it's, you know, I'm over here. I'm over here. It's hard to distinguish yourself, and you have to be creative. And, you know, that's one of the things. It's like musicians have to do today, because there is so much content out there. They've got to do whatever they can to make themselves stand out and distinguish themselves. And you have to be, as well as a creative, you've got to be a marketer. And that's totally an entirely different part of your brain.
Totally. So you're set up for success, because you've got a network, a brand name, a fan base. So you've got a great head start. But if you were just starting from the ground floor, yeah, you've got to really start to think about, and in ahead of time, to start building that audience, and, you know, have a pre-launch strategy, which is teasing the upcoming content, and then a launch strategy, and then sort of that maintenance phase where you don't want to oversaturate your audience with constant reminders that your book is for sale.
Right. That's a balancing act.
It is a balancing act. And so there's so many pieces of the puzzle. But I mean, the good news is there are a lot of people that do it really well. You just need to find someone that does it well and, you know, sort of model against their behavior, but adapt it to your own unique voice and style. And sometimes that begins with starting with what is my own voice and how do I want, you know, am I this edgy, cool girl or am I more targeting parents with, you know, like there's just so many different, you know, am I the mom that has martinis at three every day or am I the mom that promotes, like there's so many different ways to do it, right?
Yeah.
And it's finding that voice and it being authentic, right? Like no one's going to buy a persona that you put on and instantly become this different person because you've written a book. Like when you release your book, everybody knows what your style is. If you were all of a sudden to become this earnest, really sweet, empathetic, like not that you're not those things in real life, but you know what I mean? Like
walking around wearing an ascot. With a monocle?
Yes, totally, right?
Well, there goes like, my marketing plan.
But you know what I mean? People would be like, yes. Well, that's not Steve. Give me a break. But you got to, you know, you got to be who you are. And that's when people that...
Well, people can smell a phony and they don't want to take in or they don't want to help encourage people in their phoniness.
No, it's not. It's like they're like children. And social media, you get that vibe of like, that's not you. And I know what you're trying to do. It's not cool. So your people are better off, I would say, risking being less cool, but being true to themselves than posing with, you know, martinis and trying to be someone that you're not. Not that martinis are cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. It was just a prop example.
The only prop that I go to, the martini.
We're not anti-martini, but we're not pro-martini either. We're martini yes. agnostic.
Yeah. Just to be clear, everyone, we're not advocating 3 p.m. martinis.
But we're not saying don't either, because this is 20. this is 2020, and
exactly
everything is cool.
Yes,
but you're. Exactly. I think what impresses me a lot about your story is the fact that you said that it wasn't a book that you found that publishers were interested in, but it was what you wanted. It was your vision. It was what mm-hmm. you wanted to say. And you didn't just say, well, I'm going to write something else or I'm going to adapt this in a way that isn't true to what I want to do in order to try to get a better chance of getting it published and having success. You stuck to that vision. You stuck to that voice that was inside of you that said, this is what I want to say. And that always impresses me. And I think is something that impresses upon other entrepreneurs who are told, you know, many entrepreneurs are told what you're doing is crazy. What you're mm-hmm. doing, there's a lot of other people. You know how many other people try to do this and fail? There's all of these discouragements placed before you. And there's, you know, I often say there's usually about 1,000 reasons people can give you why something won't work. And the only reason you can give them why it will work is you just know it will. And that's not sufficient when you're trying to convince people. And it becomes sometimes overwhelming. And that's why you've got to, I mean, you have to have some semblance of in touch with reality. But at the same time, just because your vision isn't something that somebody's done before, or it's something that many have done, but you know, many have tried, but many have failed. It doesn't mean that you should abandon that voice inside you, that fire inside of you is not going to be satisfied if you just go another way or you abandon the vision and alter it to the point that you no longer recognize it. That's not what being a creative is about. And that an entrepreneurial spirit is a creative spirit. You're building something and that taps into, it's an extension of who you are in every sense of the way, every sense of the word. And I'm really impressed with what you've accomplished and, with the fact that it is so different from the career that that you've been building for you know all these many years. It's such a departure, and yet you've been successful now in you know two different disciplines. That's impressive.
Thank you. It's important to keep your brain moving, right? And to satisfy any of those creative urges. The world needs more creativity and art, not less of it. So, you know, I would encourage your listeners to explore that creative side if it's just something that's been brewing in the back of their brains. And, you know, we all, a lot of us need that day job, but you've got that creative idea. Explore it, dig into it, see if you can, you know, unpeel that onion back a little bit, because you never know what gems you're going to find, right?
That's right. And those are probably the wisest words to let this come in for a landing. I want to thank you very much, Heather Gordon, for sharing with us your journey and the challenges that you faced and how you faced them and how you overcame them. I think that it's inspiring to other people who are facing that same journey and are at different portions, at different parts of that path. And congratulations on the success of Does the Queen Fart and I Am Lazarus, A Goat Story.
Thanks, Stephen. I'd be happy to be one of your chapter readers, should I be one of the lucky ones. If
you're on the list as of now.
Send me a juicy one, though. I want a juicy chapter with lots of intrigue and debauchery.
It's oh no, that's the book Moses is writing.
I love it.
And there's a joke for those who
played, Steve.
There's a joke for those who worked at Chum Television. All right, Heather, thank you very much. Continued success in both your chosen fields.
Steve.
I'm sure it will continue. Is there another book on the horizon?
No, not yet. I thought after the fart, I don't even call it the Queen Fart. It's now just the fart.
The fart.
I would be done. And then the urge and the desire and the idea for Lazarus sort of came in, and I had to write it. And I'm still in that lull of not having that creative drive yet. So it may be over, or, you know, you may be hearing from me again. I leave that to the universe and my brain to decide. I try and stay out of these discussions and arguments.
Well,
you don't need my opinion.
Just a suggestion. Scratch and sniff books next time.
There is so many things I could say, but I'm going to be polite and say thank you for your time, Stephen. Let's stay in touch.
Yes, absolutely. Heather Gordon's books, Does the Queen Fart and I Am Lazarus, A Goat Story, are available in stores and on Amazon. I encourage you to check them out. And you don't have to be a child to enjoy children's literature. So feed that child inside you as well. I'm Stephen Kersner, and this has been Visionaires.